Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 5, Vidura's Talks with Maitreya, Text Number 5. Karoti Karmani Krita Avatara Yani Atma Tantra Bhagavan Sri Adisha Ita Sarja Agre Idam Niriha Samstapya Pritim Jagata Vidate Karoti Karmani Kritavataro Yanyatma Tantra Bhagavan Sri Jyatisha Etasa Sarajagra Idam Niriha Samstapya Vritim Jagato Vidate Karoti does them. Karmani transcendental activities. Krita by accepting. Avatara incarnations. Yani all those. Atma Tantra self-independent. Bhagavan the personality of Godhead. Adisha, the Lord of the three worlds. Dita, as much as. Sasarja, created. Agre, at first. Idam, this cosmic manifestation. Niriha, although desireless. Samstapya by establishing. Vritim means of livelihood. Jagataha of the universes. Vidate as he regulates. O great sage, kindly narrate how the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the independent, desireless Lord of the three worlds, and the controller of all energies, accepts incarnations and creates the cosmic manifestation with perfectly arranged regular principles for its maintenance. Let's repeat this. O great sage,
O great sage,
kindly narrate how the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the independent,
desireless
Lord of the three worlds, and the control of all energies, accepts incarnations, and creates the cosmic manifestation with perfectly arranged regular principles for its maintenance. Purport. Lord Krishna is the original personality of Godhead, from whom the three creative incarnations, namely the Purusha avatars, Karan Dakshayi Vishnu, Garbo Dakshayi Vishnu, and Shiro Dakshayi Vishnu, expand. The whole material creation is conducted by the three Purushas in successive stages, under the external energy of the Lord, and thus the material nature is controlled by Him. Thinking material nature to be independent is like seeking milk from the nipple-like bags on the neck of a goat. The Lord is independent and desireless. He does not create the material world for His own satisfaction, as we create our household affairs to fulfill our material desires. Actually, the material world is created for the illusory enjoyment of the conditioned souls who have been against the transcendental service of the Lord since time immemorial. But the material universes are full in themselves, There is no scarcity for maintenance in the material world. Because of their poor fund of knowledge, the materialists are disturbed, and there is an apparent increase of population on the earth. Whenever there is a living being on the earth, however, his substance is immediately arranged by the Lord. The other species of living entities, who far outnumber human society, are never disturbed for maintenance. They are never seen dying of starvation. It is only human society that is disturbed about the food situation, and to cover up the real fact of administrative mismanagement, take shelter in the plea that the population is excessively increasing. If there is any scarcity in the world, it is scarcity of God consciousness. Otherwise, by the grace of the Lord, there is no scarcity of anything. Karoti karmani krita avataro yanyatma tantra bhagavams triyadisha itasasar jagra idam niriha samstapya vritim jagato vidate. O great sage, kindly narrate how the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is independent, desireless Lord of the three worlds and the control of all energies, accepts incarnations and creates the cosmic manifestation with perfectly arranged regular principles for its maintenance. Om Vishnu Vidaya Krishna Prasadai Budhai Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasapundeve Gauravani Vijarne Nirvushe Shashinivadi Paskatyade Siddharne. As we can see in the purport, that the very question that Vidura is asking is in itself wondering about seeming contradictions in Krishna's activities. Because after all, if the Lord is independent and desireless, and he controls all the different energies, then why is he creating this material world? In other words, generally speaking, someone, whatever we do, must have some purpose behind it. Otherwise, we wouldn't do it. If we have some desire, then we do something. Someone with no desire, he doesn't do anything. Just like, for instance, we may not have any desire to create a battleship. Does anyone here have a desire to create a battleship? Few would like to create. Well, most of us don't have any real desire to do it. What will you do with your battleship when you have to create it? Go back and die. Well, that's interesting. But on the other hand, for our Krishna consciousness movement right now, in the present, battleships probably wouldn't be very interesting. We wouldn't know what to do with them. So most of us don't have any desire to do it, and therefore none of us are really engaged in any activity to create a battleship, as far as I know. Because we have no desire to do it. There's no purpose to it. So if the Supreme Lord has no desire, then how is he doing anything? If he actually has no desire in the material world, then how is it that he's doing so many things? Not only so many things, he's creating unlimited universes. It seems like a person has some ambition. I mean, to create a whole lot of universes, and then you're going to have to spend the whole time trying to maintain them. 411 quadrillion, 40 billion years maintaining it. And then at the end, you just annihilate it. It sounds like here's a person who has a lot of desire. I mean, who's so ambitious? Who here is planning to create a universe in the future? Even one planet would be hard enough. Even Radhadesh is difficult enough. What to speak of this? Belgium. Trying to figure out what's going on in Belgium. Who would want to find out what's going on in Belgium? And yet Krishna is creating billions of universes, trillions, quadrillions of universes, and they say he's desireless. And he's independent. I mean, if he's independent, then even if it's not his desire to do it, then even if someone else has a desire, then why would he do it? Because he's independent. He's not dependent on anyone else's desire. And yet, Being so powerful, he controls all the different energies. Whatever is going on, he's controlling. But in spite of the fact you say he's independent, no one's asked, can force him to do anything, and that he has no desire to do anything, and he's controlling everything, but still he accepts incarnations. He's coming in so many incarnations. Everywhere, wherever you pop up, there is Krishna. You can't avoid him. Just like sometimes the materialists, they complain that the devotees are everywhere. Sometimes the devotees who do book distribution, during the day they go downtown, the materialists would see them downtown, and then at night they go door to door, you know, be knocking on the door of the same people who saw them downtown. There was one couple, they saw the devotees one day downtown in the city, they flew over for a vacation to the top part of Finland, where only there are polar bears. And there was some devotee distributing books. He couldn't believe it. They couldn't believe it. They thought these people are everywhere. They're all pervading. So Krishna accepts so many incarnations, you can't even avoid him. He's the super spy. I mean, they try to have intelligent agencies and have all these gadgets to try and figure out what's going on, but he enters right into the heart of the living entity and just watches the person constantly, day and night, recording everything that they're doing. Everyone. What a super spy. And yet he's desireless. So this is all kind of, how is this possible? He creates cosmic manifestations. He enters everywhere. He's seeing everyone from the sun, from the moon, from the stars, from the demigods, from the super soul, from Garbhadakshay Vishnu, Shiradakshay Vishnu, Karnadakshay Vishnu, just recording everything, watching everything from every angle. So, what is going on? So therefore he's asking these questions. And then it says, Vritim, he's perfectly arranged things for maintenance. That he sets all the rules and regulations up, and this is called Vritim. If you want to survive here, then you have to follow the law. It's not that it's free-for-all. Do whatever you like. No, unless you understand the Vritim, the how you get your maintenance, then you don't get your maintenance. And not only us, but even the demigods. The whole cosmic manifestation, the word you use here is vidate, is regulated. There's laws behind everything. If one follows the laws, one gets benefit. If one doesn't follow laws, then good luck. It doesn't work. Therefore, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, pravritim cha nivritim cha. Those who, pravritim means those who accept the rules, they progress. And those who nivritim, those who don't accept the rules, then they have some problem. Pravritim cha, nivritim cha. Or nivritim means what you're not supposed to do. In other words, there's things that you're supposed to do in the material world, and there's things that you're not supposed to do. And if you accept what you're supposed to do, and you reject what you're not supposed to do, then everything works smoother. Jana na vidur asura. But the people in general, they don't know what is actually these laws. They think, in modern society, there is no law. There's no lawgiver. There's nothing but accidents going on. Of course, Prabhupada said that this philosophy is absurd, because although they claim there's nothing but accidents going on, still they're very carefully arranging their lives so the best accidents happen to them. No one sits at home and thinks, well, by accident I'll get rich. I don't have to work. I don't have to plan my life. I don't have to find out what's going on. Just by some accident, the money will just kind of arrive at my door. Or I'll get my PhD just by accident. I'll sit here and by accident they'll write my name as one of the graduates by some accident. In the practical everyday life, the people who are claiming everything comes about by accident, they very carefully plan out how everyone will believe that everything is accidental. So this is contradictory, and things that are contradictory, unless they're absolutely contradictory, they're not true in the material world, because there is inherent contradiction. Therefore, the scientists, by their very activities, show us, although they claim everything is accidental, but they very carefully try to do everything in order to understand things properly and do things properly to get their maximum benefit. But somehow or another, because they're demons, they don't accept what's real and don't reject what's unreal. They accept what's unreal and they reject what's real because they're demons. And although they take 1 + 1 = 3 rather than 2, after that they do everything very carefully. And what is their problem? Nasocham napichacharo. Nasatyam tesha vidyate. They don't nasatyam or nasocham. So they're not clean. Clean doesn't mean, of course, they may wash their hands every month after they eat. Of course, what they usually do is they, after eating to be clean, they just wipe their hands on their trousers or their shirts. Just to clean off their hand. Most of the society thinks they're clean. Of course, they have all these detergents. The housewife uses all these detergents made out of alcohol in the belief that this is cleaning the house. But according to the Vedic conception, it's just making the house more dirty, more contaminated. They usually, sometimes they wash their hands after they eat, but rarely you see anyone in this world washing their hands before they eat. They look at their hand, if it's not black, they think it must be clean. So this is socha. And not only externally they're not clean, but internally. According to Bhagavad Gita, there's a certain internal cleanliness too. And that trivida narakasyedam dvaram nashtam atmanaha kama krodha tatalobas tasmat etam trayam tyajet. There are three gates leading to hell: lust, anger, and greed. So if one is full of lust, anger, and greed, as well as illusion and madness and envy, then how can one say one is clean? But there's no conception of internal cleanliness nowadays. People, and if there is, people can't understand. But this is socha. Because they don't strive for internal or external cleanliness, therefore they're just becoming more contaminated. They don't mind if they pollute the cities from the factories. They don't think it's a big deal. They think they're making progress. People are dying from all kinds of respiratory diseases, but as far as they're concerned, they're making progress because they don't really care. They don't care if everyone dies as long as they make profit. So this is madness. But anyhow, in a mad city, where folly is wise, where folly is bliss, is ignorant to be wise. No. What is that? How does it go? It's folly to be wise where ignorance is bliss. So modern society, they don't care if there is contamination coming out of the factories, from the automobiles, from air pollution, mine pollution. They don't really care. Because there's no conception of socham, and archara, what is to be done? They have no conception. What is to be done is to go back to the spiritual world, to realize oneself as a spiritual soul. Their only conception is increase my wealth. Krishna will explain more detail. They think, idam adyamaya labva. Imam praptye manoratam idam astiyam api me bhavishyati punardhanam. That so much do I have today, and I'll gain more according to my schemes. So much wealth do I have, and in the future I'll get more and more. He is my enemy, and I will kill him, or I have killed him. And all my other enemies will be killed also. I'm the Lord of everything. I'm perfect. I'm powerful. And I am happy. So this is the demoniac conception. They're absorbed in this conceit. If you think, just like we had this book, I guess it was very graphic. One time, I think Mother Nikunja Vasina had distributed it, something with the housewife, and she has fangs, and little children are like little animals with big nails, and their poor householder man is being set upon by these domestic carnivores. Is that right? That was in one of our books. Yeah. Some people saw it and they were shocked. Then how could such a nice lady as Mother Nikunja Vasini be distributing such a horrible book to people and smiling when she does it? So similarly, if people read the 16th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, they'll think, these people are quite pessimistic. They're very critical. This, whoever wrote this book or spoke it, he was quite critical of people. All he keeps on talking about is lust and anger and greed and people with conceit and envy. Who does he think he's dealing with anyhow? He thinks he's so pure that he can criticize everyone like this? Just because they don't surrender to him. But it's very graphically explained. And on the basis of that, so many difficulties. Because people don't know what's to be done. Therefore, instead of striving for purification of consciousness towards transcendence, they're striving to go into the lower species of life. And satyam, truthfulness, the last leg of religion. Because of lack of cleanliness, because of not knowing what to do, therefore they're killing animals, they're engaged in all kinds of intoxication, illicit sex. Therefore the last leg, truthfulness, that they're also kicking away at. If you want to find out what lie everyone believes, then you read the newspaper. Not to find out what's going on, but at least to find out what everyone else thinks is going on. Because truthfulness, that is, practically no one believes in truthfulness. And the greatest untruthfulness, of course, is that we identify ourselves with this body, and no matter what we tell people, or tell ourselves sometimes, we just won't accept it. We just won't be truthful. I'm a little tiny servant of God. Oh, this is too much. I gotta be more than just a little tiny servant of God. Therefore, basically speaking, the whole material world is based on truthfulness, and people are cultivating it more and more. And then, asatyam apratishtam te jagad oharanishram aparashparam sambhujyam kimanyakkama haitukam. They think the whole thing is unreal, it has no foundation, has no God in control, it is produced as sex desire and has no other cause than lust. So basically speaking, even people who believe in God, they don't really understand very much about Him. They have no real knowledge about how He performs His activities, how He comes His incarnations, what He's doing here. Therefore they have so many conceptions that God's some old man, He's senile, He's making so many mistakes. He's vicious. He's just like, he's a heartless person, just watching everyone and just condemning them to internal hell, watching them burn. And he's so heartless, he doesn't really care. They didn't like me, I don't like them. To hell. Burn forever. Well, I just changed my mind. Too late. What kind of God are they worshiping? With that conception, you can imagine what people are thinking. That's the Supreme. Takes people, for one, they have 60 years, the shotgun is there, 100 years, They got, you know, to get it together. They didn't get it together. Then forever they're just thrown into hell, just burning and suffering and screaming. Wait, I made a mistake. Too late. What a heartless, cruel person. Who could be more heartless and cruel than God? But we worship Him anyhow, because if not, He's going to throw us there too. So is this the God that's going to invoke our love? What kind of love will we have for such a God? And if you just bribe the old man for a few years, it doesn't matter what sinful activity you do, you just accept his son into your heart and just pray that he suffers like anything for what you do. Then he gives you, you know, an eternal position of whatever, playing a harp or a horn somewhere on a cloud. Just because you pray that his son suffer like anything for all your sinful activities. So this is the God we're supposed to worship and pray to for. So of course people, their viewpoint is distorted. Their understanding of God is distorted. We tell people that God is a cowherd boy in the spiritual world, herding cows, and he's a vegetarian. They'll never understand it. Therefore, we heard that here in Belgium, there's a class of Indians who come from a certain religion, and their philosophy is that, at least some of them have the philosophy that Krishna, he's in hell right now. That's what they believe. They believe that Krishna is in hell because he did so many sinful activities. When he was young, he used to go around just stealing. And it's because his parents didn't properly train him, even though he was so sinful. Therefore, he grew up and he just ran away with all these girls. Then when he grew up, he became, you know, he harassed all these kings, killed many of them. Therefore, now he's in hell. And after he gets purified, that because he was a powerful person, he'll come back as one of their leaders. So what to speak of the Western world, how people don't understand God, or even Krishna. Then even people from India, they think, oh, you're worshipping some lusty aboriginal cowherd boy. Therefore, Srimad Bhagavatam very systematically explains, step by step, how everything is actually arranged and regulated, and how Krishna has great concern about the creation, that he's coming, and it's an absolute creation. In other words, Krishna is absolutely lovable and loving. So every manifestation, every creation that comes from Krishna, it also has the same nature. If there's any problem, it's not with Krishna, and it's not with the creation. The problem is with us. That's what we have to accept. That's the most important thing to understand and accept, that everything else is alright except for us. But that's the hardest thing to accept. The last thing that anyone wants to accept. We figured, I'm okay, you're okay. The only thing that's not okay is that somehow or another, either God's is the enemy, and we'll have to figure out by science how to break into the kingdom of God and overthrow the rascal. And in the meantime, we try and keep it secret because he has his agents everywhere. Or we just accept the guy became senile and he can't keep it together and just hope one of the other angels takes over before it's too late. Or we think there is no God. That we are the gods. That it's us against the laws of nature. If there are any laws, and by some our own intelligence, our own investigation, we'll figure out how to take over. And finally there'll be peace when we take over. We become God. So many misconceptions, so many different speculations, all due to the modes of ignorance and passion. Therefore, one has to understand things clearly, how the real problem is with us. Tattenu kampam susamikshamano bunjana evatma kritam vipakam ridvagvat buddhir vidadanamaste kriveti yo bhukti sade sadayava. that praying for Krishna's mercy. What is his mercy? Ikshamana. Susumikshamana. Su means very nice, and iksha means to see. So we want to see things properly. Susumikshamana. Iksha is actually this ability to see comes from the intelligence, and it must manifest itself in the mind. If we see things in such a way as to become morose and depressed, then we're not seeing things properly. If ultimately we look around and we think, oh God, what a fool he is. Look how horrible he's arranged everything. That he's my enemy, or he's a fool, or something. We look around, and we ultimately judge the Supreme like that, then we don't see things. But the devotee, who's gotten a little mercy of Krishna, it says, Kaivalya Narakayate. The idea of getting out of the material world is just like, or emerging into Brahman is just like hell. And Tridasha Akasha Pushpayate. The idea of going to the heavenly planet seems just like a phantasmagoria. And Dordentendriya Kalasarpa Patali Prokata Damastrayate. The idea of figuring out how to control the material world, getting it under our control, seems a useless waste of time. Vishva Purnam Sukhayate. And the whole world seems very happy, ecstatic. So this is amazing. People see, oh, the devotees look around, they see people starving, so many people crippled, so many problems going on, wars, pestilence, starvation, and they're ecstatic, they're dancing. Just like after the World Trade Center disaster, then the devotees would think of going on Harinam, but they decided not to. Because otherwise people would have thought, oh, here they are. They're so jubilant and ecstatic that they finally, the terrorists, they destroy the World Trade Center. Therefore they're going there, dancing, singing. They thought the proper response, you know, everyone should be very gloom and depressed, and this is, you know, how they see things. If they're informed that Krishna did it, he drove the planes into the World Trade Center and killed all these people, burned them to death, had them jump off the buildings, and the devotees, their God did it all, and they're going out in the streets, dancing and chanting in bliss. So people can't understand because they don't understand things properly. They don't see things. And therefore their whole mentality, their whole perception, their whole feeling towards things is all wrong. Of course, the devotees won't go out in the street, dance and chant that all these people got killed. That's not their idea. Their idea is that if more people won't get killed in similar ways, then they'll have to become Krishna conscious. After all, what were these people in the World Trade Center doing? Were they all very busily trying to figure out how to save the world and make them Krishna conscious? And then when God saw this, then immediately drove planes into that to take care of them. No, practically speaking, probably everyone in the World Trade Center, most of them at least, were all trying to figure out how to increase animal killing, how to increase intoxication and gambling and illicit sex. That's their whole business. And in order to help them, Krishna arranged they got their karma, so that they went to the lower species of life instead of the lowest of all the species of life. That because of sinful activities, therefore there are sinful reactions. And the devotees, they go on chant not out of happiness to see people suffering, but so that more people can stop suffering and come to the spiritual platform. Because the devotees see everything correctly, therefore their mentality is such that they're the friend of everyone. Atmo pamyena sarvatra. Atmo pamyena sarvatra. Smam pashati yorjana. Sukham vayiri vadukham siyogi paramomataha. Because the devotees can understand that the real person is the soul, and that the soul will be happy in Krishna consciousness in any circumstance, that no one dies. That any material circumstance we're in, it is not very good for the soul. The only really good thing is Krishna consciousness for the soul. Therefore the devotees do their best to help everyone whether they think they're happy or distressed, become God conscious, Krishna conscious, to actually solve their problems. Therefore, the devotees actually see things properly. And they tolerate ridvaga. They know if they themselves are suffering, and everyone is suffering in the material world, anyone who has a body, they know that the particular type of suffering they're undergoing is due to their own past misdeeds, and Krishna has arranged in such a way as to help them, so they can make progress towards Krishna consciousness. Therefore, in any circumstance, they go on with their Krishna consciousness, and with their body, mind, and words, trying to serve Krishna, and in this way become eligible to get Krishna's mercy. Therefore, we have to hear about Krishna in every aspect, as his incarnations, how he's created the material world, and how he's absolutely good in everything he's doing, and anyone who opposes Krishna is bad. It is not that these are nice people on the street, they seem like ladies and gentlemen, but they don't like Krishna, and therefore they're good. No, Prabhupada said, well, our philosophy is that we're good, and everyone else is bad. Now, of course, everyone thinks like that. But we don't go on the street and say, hi, I'm Mr. Good. Or I'm Mrs. Good. We came out here to meet all you bad people. We don't personally think like that. We have to think, I'm also one of the baddies. But Krishna is good, and to accept Krishna, that's also good. And because Krishna, everything comes from Krishna, therefore everything understood in relationship to Krishna is also good. And everything done in relationship to Krishna is also good. And everything done to oppose Krishna is bad. Because there's nothing but Krishna and his energies, and his intention is good for everyone. And our conceptions, if they're not in line with Krishna consciousness, are just mistaken conceptions, and will act in such a way as although we may think we're doing good for ourselves and others, but we may be doing very bad for ourselves and others. Just like Vidura will explain here that, what about Duryodhana? He didn't even ask about Dhritarashtra previously. When Vidura was asking Uddhava about the different personalities, Dwarka, or in Hastinapur. He didn't even ask about Dhritarashtra, because he knew whatever he's doing and his son is doing is all bad, because they're all opposed to Krishna. Therefore, it doesn't matter if they're successful enough. That Krishna may have encouraged them to do more and more bad. He may be encouraging them, giving them so many successes, but ultimately it's all bad and therefore it's going to be a failure at the end. And it was a failure, because it wasn't in line with Krishna's desires. Therefore, we have to understand who this independent Lord is, how he's working here. He has no material aspiration, but the spirit souls have aspirations. And Krishna, he acts as a servant to his servants. Therefore, he's arranged the material energy out of compassion, so the desireful souls desire to lord over the material nature can do so, and at the same time gradually make progress towards their real life again, reviving their real life, and therefore creates the cosmic manifestation, accepts so many incarnations, all for the benefit of others. So understanding this, then we'll appreciate Krishna more, and we'll not appreciate our attachments to the material misconceptions that we've cultivated since time immemorial. So, thank you. Any questions? Yes.
You said that Johnny Farm is with us,
you'll have to talk about it.
I want to know what is our approach after that.
Our problem?
What is our approach to
Is it a good place? It's a great place. Kali Yuga is great because it is said, Kalo Doshe Nide Rajan Yasti Eka Mahaguna Kirtanya Eva Krishnasya Mukta Sangha Paramuja. This age is an ocean of material problems. So many problems, and there's only one solution, chanting Hare Krishna. So this age is fantastic because we have no choice but to constantly chant Hare Krishna and go back to Godhead. Previous ages, people had many choices. They think, let me stay here. It's so beautiful. I don't even have to work. And just the vegetables are growing. The sun's shining. Perfect weather. I couldn't have made a better creation myself. What's the sense of going back to Godhead? This is as good as Godhead. And gradually things get worse. And people think, well, it's not so bad. You know, Treta Yuga comes. That's pretty good, you know. Got to work a little bit, but it's not much work. And then Dwarpa Yuga, still it's religion, everyone's friendly, you know, enough to eat. And then Kali Yuga comes, and it's complete hell and chaos. And there's only one way to stop it, to chant Hare Krishna. But that chanting Hare Krishna is so powerful, it can bring one, even one lifetime, back to the spiritual world. So it's a great age for the devotees, and it's a horrible age for those who aren't devotees. Because there's no quicker age where you can go to the lower species of life than Kali Yuga. It's very easy to remember him. We just have to hear about him. That's all. And then we'll gradually hear about him and chant about him. And remember, the only problem is, since time immemorial, some hundreds of quadrillions of years, billions and trillions of quadrillion years of lifetimes of Brahma, we've been trying to forget him. So we're very practiced in trying, knowing how to forget him. We're expert. Therefore, it may take a little practice, but not much practice. Consider the trillions and quadrillions of years, billions of lifetimes of Brahma that we've been trying to forget him. In such a short period of time, we can actually begin to remember him more and more. So the process is so powerful. Even to remember him once, you know, is such a wonderful thing. So it's quite easy, actually, to remember him. It just takes a little practice. So it may seem it's taking a long time, but if we remember all our past lives, you know, we'd faint. I think, my God, I've been here this long. Thank God for Lord Chaitanya. He's helping you get out of this world, you know, in a very short period of time. After all, we keep on hearing about Krishna. Krishna is in our heart. Krishna is... So, we can't help but remember it. Anyone who stays coming to these classes all the time, they can't help but remember him. And we'll see the deity all the time, and see these paintings, how can I forget him? So Prabhupada said, we're actually brainwashing people. We have the thankless task of brainwashing people. Most people's brains are just made out of cow dung, and we have the thankless task of trying to clean their brains of all their nonsense conceptions. And then gradually as their brain becomes clean, then, you know, the real conceptions are revealed, and we can't help but remember Krishna. One who hears that the sun is floating in its orbit because Krishna put it there, then how can they think it's just by an accident that this unlimited mass of fire and heat and light is just by accident every day rising exactly the same, the right time? So we see, when we hear that, then we think, yes, Krishna put it there. My Lord is so great. So gradually we'll see like that. Everywhere we look, we'll remember Krishna. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Grandhara Shiman Bhagavatam Kijai Srila Prabhupada Kijai Kaur Krimande.